question for you is, with the lack of play for some of these guys last season, how much more difficult was it to grade everyone in the right spot as compared to the prior 3 years you attempted this?
I think it was more difficult, if only that the kids from the 2021 draft, so the kids who were just selected, there were 12 of them in my top 50. Those kids, in many cases, didn't play the kind of schedule that you'd hope for and didn't have the sort of kind of background on them and the book on them that I usually have at this point in their process. The rest of these kids, I'm very familiar with them. I mean, the kids who were drafted 2017, 2018, 2019, 2020, who featured on this list, whether they played 10 games last year, whether they played 50 games last year, I'd already had a really strong book on them from watching them for previous years, and typically several viewings on each of them over the course of each of those years. But it did make it more difficult slotting the 2021 draftees in particular into that context of the rest of those kids, because I know a lot more about Moritz Seider or any number of this sort of older quote-unquote prospects on the list than I do about the 17, 18-year-olds that are coming in. So that made it a little bit tricky, if you will.
Los Angeles took Quinton Byfield, too, in 2020, but in this year, he's now number one on your list. What makes Quinton Byfield at the top of your top 50 list in the NHL?
Yeah, so it's interesting this year in putting together this project, because there wasn't an obvious number sort of one prospect in the world. In previous years, there has always been that guy, whether it was Rasmus Dahlin or Jack Hughes immediately after they were drafted, or whether it was Quinn Hughes coming out of Michigan when we knew what Quinn Hughes was already going to be before he had ever played an NHL game, or whether it was Elias Pettersson after that historic season that he had in the SHL. Those guys just felt natural. Even Cale Makar coming out of college, they felt natural as that sort of 1-2-3, whether it was if those kids were available as prospects when I built those lists. Those kids always just fit in 1-2-3 really nicely. This year it was more complicated. I kind of had four kids at the top who I feel are give or take interchangeable in terms of their status as a prospect. And Quinton, I ended up as sort of the de facto number one for now, if only because it's still so rare to find that sort of 6'4" center who can play with speed. He's a really strong skater for his size, has all of this sort of small area skills that you'd expect a player that big to have if they're going to be a top prospect. And really, I mean, you look around the NHL these days, there's Blake Wheeler, certainly. There's Mikko Rantanen, certainly. But there aren't a lot of sort of 6'3", 6'4", 6'5" players in the NHL who can be impactful stars at the very top of the lineup. And he just fits that mold. So he kind of becomes the exception to the rule. It's been a while since the Eric Stahls of the world and the Evgeny Malkins of the world were coming into the league. And since then, there just hasn't been that sort of big number one center who's broken into the league and looked like a true star. And I think Quinton has a chance to do that. He's still got a little bit of warts in his game and a couple of minor things that he needs to improve upon. But he was one of the youngest players in last year's draft. He was nearly eligible for this year's class. And I think when you understand him in that context and understand just how young he is, and the fact that he's still an 18-year-old, even a year after he's been selected and will turn 19 later this month, that really excites me, because he looked like a very good player in the AHL last year as a 17, 18-year-old. And then into this season, I think you'll see him take a step forward. And if he's not with the Kings out of the gate, I expect that he'll be there by the end of the year and he'll begin to look like that sort of star prospect. But it wasn't an obvious choice for Quinton. I really like Cole Caulfield. Obviously, Cole is 19 months older than Quinton, so that factored into it as well. You have to try to project where Quinton's going to be 19 months from now, and can he be making the kind of impact that Cole Caulfield just made in the playoffs? And then Owen Power, who was just taken first overall, and Trevor Zegers kind of rounded out that foursome as the four kids who I think are the four best prospects on the planet right now.
Well, I love that you bring up Zegers, because, you know, I have a bunch of Oilers fans are texting in about the fact that the Oilers passed on Zegers to take Broberg. Mm. Can you speak to where Zegers is now compared to Broberg in their step of their development?
Well, I think he's definitely emerged in a little bit of a different stratosphere. Zegers is a legitimate star prospect. He was an electric player in college. We all saw what he did at the World Juniors with the assist that he was pulling out of his hat and the way that he playmade at both of the last two World Juniors. And then we saw it this year in the AHL and briefly in the NHL, where he didn't look out of place at either level and frankly looked like one of the better young players in the AHL. And when he stepped into the NHL, looked like he could be an immediate contributor on that Ducks team. And that isn't to say that Broberg won't be a good player, but Zegras has this ability to thread passes and to find his teammates and to facilitate that could kind of make him that rare 50-60 assist guy. And even if he's only scoring 20, 21, 22 goals a year playing that style of game, that's still a very impactful top of your lineup kind of 65 to 80 point player. So I think during the prime of his career, that's what you hope to get out of Zegras at this point. I don't think it's a stretch to expect him to be that kind of player and to really be a true first line forward. And we're still not sure whether it's going to be at center or at wing for Zegras. He has played both. But even if he becomes that, it will be very hard for a player like Philip Broberg, as good as he might be. I think Philip has a chance to be a good sort of second pairing guy in the NHL. Even if he becomes that, which I would say is the very top of his ceiling, he's not going to be the same caliber of player throughout the prime of his career that I think Zegras is capable of being. But that happens at the draft. I mean, it's hard to give too much of a hard time, if you will, to the Oilers for a selection like that, if only because neither of those kids were top five prospects in that draft. And really, once you get out of the top six or seven players in a draft, it does begin to get a little bit more challenging. So it looks disappointing in hindsight now, I think, because I do think Zegras has really separated himself. But it's easy to say that now when we're sort of 2 years out of the actual draft choice.
Now, you know, Broberg wasn't in your top 50. So what is he missing compared to his peers of defensemen that were slotted, you know, in the top 50 or higher?
Yeah, my big criticism of Broberg's game has always been he was kind of in the teens and the early 20s on my list throughout that year, and I didn't love that pick at the time. And that isn't to say that he's not a good prospect, again, because he is. And if this list had run 75 players deep instead of 50 players deep, he would have been on it. But he's a very athletic kid. We all know that. He's built like an NHLer. He's got that long, strong frame. He's very sturdy. He can really move. And when you're that big and you can really move, your transition game's always going to be good. So I think that part of it is exciting for him, his ability to defend the rush and his ability to activate with his feet and push tempo and join the rush. All of that's there. I think the problem with Broberg is from the offensive zone blue line in, he's not a particularly dynamic player. He was cast as this offensive defenseman when he was drafted, and I don't think that's going to be the kind of player at all that he is in at the NHL level. He just doesn't have a ton of sort of soft area skill. He's not going to walk off the line and get to the slot a ton, and because he's so big, it's hard to beat players one-on-one. It's hard to pull pucks through his feet and that kind of a thing. And then the other piece of the puzzle is his decision-making. Despite the fact that he's a very athletic, strong, mobile player, there are real concerns among many scouts about the reads that he makes in games, whether that's defensively or offensively. He turns over the puck his fair share. He can try to do a little bit too much with the puck for his skill level. So some of that, I think, can be ironed out more than the skill inside the offensive zone. Like you can work on a kid's decision-making, and you can rein him in a little bit, and he's going to have to simplify a little bit more to be at his best at the NHL level. But I ultimately think in Broberg, what you're hoping for is more of a second pairing guy who can also penalty kill rather than a second pairing guy who can also power play. So just for me, in terms of the range that he was taken, I think if you're taking a defenseman that high, you either want him to be the shutdown of shutdown defensemen, or you would like him at the very top of his ceiling to be able to play on one of your power plays, because ultimately you can get those other guys in other areas of the draft, or you can find them in free agency a little bit easier than you can find the offensive type. So that's just where I thought that pick was a little high for me at the time. And I think years later, he's developed into a good prospect, but he's not a great one.
Breaking down his top 50 outside the NHL here with Mr. Scott Wheeler from The Athletic. Scott, you have Bouchard at 31, and I feel pretty comfortable knowing what he could be. Dylan Holloway is a player that I know Craig Button's very high on, who thinks he can contribute this year. What do you like about Dylan Holloway, and what do you see as potential for this season? You have at 33 on your list.
Yeah, Dylan's a fabulous player. I mean, he's one of those kids who just looks like he's going to be a really good NHL player. And but in saying that, I mean that he's one of the most athletic players I've ever seen play. I actually spent a lot of time with that University of Wisconsin Badgers program 2 years ago, right before the pandemic hit. I went there and I kind of embedded with that team and wrote a story about sort of life as a Badger, and really got to know throughout that process Dylan and his game very well. And you talk to anyone in that program, you talk to anyone who has played with or against him, whether that was before the program in the AJHL, at the World Juniors, et cetera, et cetera. He is a freak athlete and a brilliant skater, a very powerful skater, finishes all of his checks, plays a sort of straight line game. I think the criticism of Dylan has typically been that he's going to be more of that sort of forechecker who's got a lot of skill and can play fast out wide kind of game, but he's not going to be that sort of slick playmaker type. But every team needs those guys, and certainly you can imagine that kind of a player playing alongside a Leon Draisaitl or a Connor McDavid on the left wing. And he's played center, so maybe he'll end up at center. I could imagine him as a very good sort of middle six center as well, but I think he's better suited at the wing as the guy who hunts pucks and burns defenders wide and really plays with a ton of pace and energy. And that is a very important player in today's game, even if he doesn't become those sort of 60, 70-point players that I was talking about that tend to rank in this sort of top 20 of my list. I think he's in that very next tier, and he's going to be an impactful player, the kind of guy who puts up 50 points in a season and makes $5 or $6 million a year and is a big piece of the puzzle. So I expect Dylan to, if he's not going to be a star, to be a cut right below that and to be a really good NHL player.
You know, I love it. Just as a note, and I get your thoughts, it's funny, you look at free agency, the guys who got paid were the guys you just described. The guys that can, you know, because everyone locks up their stars for the most part. But after that, mm-hmm. It's guys that have some skill but play with tempo. You look at, just older. They trade for, or they sign Zach Hyman. You look at Blake Coleman in Calgary. Look at the guy like Warren Fogle. Even Tanev when he signed with Pittsburgh. Like, they want guys that go get pucks. And, you know, I work with a lot of young kids. I'm like, it's not that hard. You know, you work on your skill, yeah. But, you know, someone's got to go get the puck for your line mates. And if you can have some skill and do that, man, Scott, do you find those guys are hard to find because everyone wants to kind of be the guy that makes the plays?
Yeah, for sure. And Zach Hyman's a great comp, if you will. I mean, I hate to use comparables because I think they can sort of dumb down these players and sort of make it a little bit of a lazy process in terms of player evaluation. But that's what you're hoping for, right? You're hoping for someone who's maybe a little bit more skilled than Zach. I've obviously watched Zach here in Toronto for the last several years, and Zach's a great player, but the one criticism of Zach has always been that his hands aren't great, right? He creates a lot of chances for himself, but he's kind of got sort of hands of stone, if you will, in tight. And I actually think in terms of Dylan's game that he's got that piece of the puzzle as well. Okay. So I don't want to just call Dylan Holloway a checker here. He is not that by any means. He's got quick hands. He has a very hard wrist shot that sort of pops off of his stick from the top of the circles. So there's a skill package. I think you're hoping for Dylan Holloway to be a slightly better version of a Blake Coleman or a slightly better version of a Zach Hyman. And that again, I mean, we know how much value those guys have. So if he can be that, let alone maybe a tiny bit more than that, then that's a huge success with a first round pick.
Absolutely. Thanks, Scott. I love hearing it. I know Low Tide loves hearing it. I always tune in when you're on his show. Thanks for joining us today. Always great insight and a great article on The Athletic.
Cheers, man. Thanks.